It is the Locked On Bengals podcast with your hosts Joe Goodberry and Jake Lisco. Find us on Twitter at Joe Goodberry and at Jake_NFL. Please like, subscribe, and share as we try to grow this community and pump out daily Bengals content just for you.
Bengals fans, welcome into another day of the Locked On Bengals podcast. Today we have official news of Kerry Wynn signing. We have Mike Brown quotes out of Arizona, and we have renewed and fervent speculation that you can write in pen that Kyler Murray is going to be the number one pick in the NFL draft, which, along with some quotes from Mike Brown, will renew our consideration of trading for Josh Rosen. That'll be the second half of the show. First, I want to get to a couple of replies we had to the 2014 redraft. A few of you told us some of the guys that you would have really liked out of that draft class. And one of you, Dean at DD Merritt, actually said, going off of his board, off of his memory for 2014, his number one would have been Teddy Bridgewater, which lines up with us. His number two would have been Jarvis Landry or Carlos Hyde. His number three would have been Trey Turner, which we talked about yesterday. Number four would have been Telvin Smith, which is what you had, I think, at four. His fifth round pick would have been Marion Grice, running back. Number six would have been Shamar Stephen, a defensive tackle. And number seven would have been defensive end Michael Sam. So some agreement there, at least in the top four rounds and some of the guys we talked about. And the other one was, who was it, Joe?
Tracy McBrady.
Tracy, right? McBrady.
Is that his last name?
I don't think so.
Tracy McGrady, the former player, former Orlando Magic.
And Toronto Raptor?
Yeah. I think Raptors first, right?
With Vince Raptors Carter. First, and then also Houston Rockets.
Yeah.
We're not an NBA podcast, folks. Anyway,
you have an NBA team?
I was born in Chicago, so.
I was an Orlando Magic fan just because Penny Hardaway and Shaq in the early 90s had a starter's jacket. Remember those starter's jackets in the early 90s?
Yeah, I sure
do. I had one.
I love Penny Hardaway, but I grew up, my parents, you know, were watching the Bulls in my house because they, you know, I was born in Chicago, right? So,
and that time frame makes sense.
Yeah, and there was six championships in my childhood. So that was easy to be a bandwagon fan of as a two-year-old. But anyway, Tracy McGrady wanted Kevin Pierre-Louis and Aaron Lynch, who Aaron Lynch was on my list for sure. And I think Kevin Pierre-Louis might have been on my list of guys that they could have redrafted as well.
Yeah, both were near the top of my board. Once we got to about the fourth round, I was a big fan of Kevin Pierre-Louis. He was a undersized but very athletic linebacker out of Boston College. Ended up going to Seattle, I want to say, in the fourth or fifth. And really was just a special teams player for most of his career. I'm not even sure he's still playing. We didn't look him up before the show. But the other guy, Aaron Lynch, has had some success in the NFL, and I believe he was a fifth or sixth rounder. And again, he was near my board a few times, but I tried to take the best guy on the top and not just cherry pick it.
And of course, we'll continue to do that. We'll take the same approach to 2015, 2016, and then I don't know if we're ready to do 2017, but certainly 2015 is one that we're excited to redo because of what a colossal strikeout that draft was for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, and 2016, I mean, I would find it hard to think we don't take William Jackson, but we're not there yet. He was really high on my board.
It'll probably be William Jackson in the first. Who knows about the rest? We'll get there another day. Kerry Wynn officially signed with the Cincinnati Bengals, announced as a one-year deal. He is a guy that you probably hadn't heard of before they signed him. He was a backup role player type for the New York Giants. He was an undrafted free agent in the 2014 NFL draft. He was on the list for consideration in the seventh round you heard us talk about yesterday. Just because he's ended up signing with the Bengals, so I put him on the list as a guy you could consider late. His strength is really run defense. If you look at his Pro Football Focus data, he is out of, including Bengals defensive linemen, he would have blown them out of the water in run stop percentage. So has some high productivity as an edge player, occasionally kicking inside as a run defender, and did have a couple games where he recorded four pressures, I think, in 2018. So I'm not that excited about this signing, and we've talked about that on the show before, but if he comes in and plays 15 snaps a game and provides good run defense and maybe the occasional pass rush, that's very much in the Wallace Gilberry mode of player, maybe a little bit less productive, a little bit more two-dimensional, though, than Wallace Gilberry, I'd say.
Same with Chris Smith.
Yeah,
I'd same with Chris Smith. Wasn't great against the run either. And they've always had a guy like this, from Frosty Rucker, Jonathan Finney, and so on.
Michael
they've always
Johnson.
Had a Yes, in later in his career. Yeah, they've always had a guy that was a base run defender, and they kicked him inside defensive tackle. The added bonus with Lynn, he's a pretty good special teamer.
He is a back of the roster guy, though, really. So if they were to get a Ed Oliver in the first round, if that's the way they end up going, or if they find themselves with a falling Jerry Tillery, or if Jeffrey Simmons comes back and let's say he's a second round pick when he's healthy, these are all guys that are going to start to eat away at some of those third down snaps where Kerryman might stay on the field for those, you know, those obvious rundowns potentially. If it's not Sam Hubbard, if it's not Jordan Willis, whoever else is on the roster at that point.
And to take a guess, I'm thinking this contract is probably a one-year, like $2.7, $2.8 million deal. And for a guy that maybe only will play, you know, 20 snaps a game on defense, but then maybe another 10 on special teams, I think that he could end up being a decent value player, because I think at this point he's on the active 45, and you can't say the same with the backups at end or tackle on this roster right now.
So if we say his contract is $2 million or whatever it is against the cap, if all of $5 million of Darquez Denard's contract is a cap hit for 2019, which would mean it's fully guaranteed, I think, that would leave the Bengals at $20.8-ish million of cap space. And that's the top 51 cap figure. We will, at some point, we'll have a cap 101 day, I think. I was talking to my dad actually before the podcast, and he's like, yeah, you guys talk about dead money and all these different kinds of cap space and cash spending, and I don't know what you guys are talking about. So maybe one day we'll have the right person on the show to talk about a little cap 101 to try to give that basic breakdown. But regardless, point there is top 51 cap space, which is a cap number that matters, about $20.8 million. If those two deals come in around $7 million of a cap hit, which I think is probably shooting high.
Yeah.
So you take another, say, $10 million off for the rookie deals. That leaves them around $10, $11 million, which is...
And you don't have to take off 10. We've discussed this, but I would say 10 for injury insurance and rookie deals.
And yeah, I'm not saying that you have to. This is the way the Bengals typically duke out the money, though.
Yes.
And so... Even if you take all that money off, they maybe sign a couple of guys that are waiver cuts, they release some of the draft picks, it ends up, they're going to float about $10 million, and they do this every year. And maybe some of that money will get used toward extensions. This is a good transition, actually, to talk about what Mike Brown said today in Arizona. Sometimes they will use that money for extensions, and they are obviously looking to extend Tyler Boyd. Today, Mike Brown said in Arizona that they would like to extend AJ Green. And this is the first we've heard, I think, from the Bengals going on the record about wanting to offer AJ Green a third contract.
And I don't think it's just going on record. He seemed confident about it. He said, basically, I think we can come to an agreement on what his value is. And if we can, this should get done. And for me, that's a great you know, quote from him and a great line that makes you really feel confident that they will find a middle ground in and that they are interested in giving a third contract to a receiver. It's funny because we've talked a few times this year that really it's rare. And we had used Larry Fitzgerald as an example. And then reports are Julio Jones is going to be next. And Julio and Green have been neck and neck since they've been drafted.
Didn't Julio get the $20 million a year deal?
He may have. It was reports. I didn't see if it ever got finalized or not. I didn't know. So if he gets it or not. But it seems like that will happen in Atlanta. So him and Green have always been from being drafted just a couple picks apart to getting deals around the same time also and being highly productive and accomplished receivers. It sounds like they also will get a third contract with the same team. So good for him. And I'm excited for that to happen. But we should also hope that Tyler Boyd is shortly behind or with him at some point.
Yeah, and that's one that the Bengals definitely want to get done, I think, according to the beat writers anyway. It's not really a question. That's something that they are working on, even, I think. The exact quote from Mike Brown on AJ Green was, "Oh, I think he's a proven commodity, isn't he? The price range for him will be something we can figure out will come together." So, you know, we talked about the injury risk this year with, you know, older receivers because he's coming off of a couple of years where he's had injuries, but he says, you know, if AJ's healthy, he's as good a receiver as anyone in the league. However, if you thought that, oh, Andy Dalton only has 2 years left on his deal, Mike Brown did go on record today saying, "I think it's a good year for Dalton to show he can, like we think he will. After he reestablishes himself, we would want to get together with him and see if we can extend it." So Mike Brown saying, and not that it really needed to be said because Dalton has 2 years left on his deal and it's a very team-friendly deal as far as veteran quarterbacks go. Mike Brown said today, "We're not going to extend Andy Dalton before this season. We're going to see how it goes." So maybe there's some open-mindedness there. Coming from the owner, this is kind of a new tone, at least from Mike Brown on Andy Dalton.
And I think the key word for me that I took out of this, and it's not just that there are no consideration of extending him right now, it's that they would like him to reestablish himself. And for me, I took that as, and for other things, I think it's because I'm putting two and two together sometimes in my mind. I'm taking this quote plus what I think I know and what I've been told is that they would like him to prove or play at the level they saw in 2015, which he was a MVP type candidate. It was his career year. It was his best year, obviously. It was maybe even the best quarterback production year in Bengals history. Maybe not for if you take an era in consideration, but definitely stats wise on a blank slate. So I think they want him to get to that level. Some may have read that quote and said, well, they want him to make sure he plays the way he did last year, which was good enough, but he got hurt and things got hurt around him and everything fell apart. So maybe if he proves that again, they'll pay him. I believe they want to make sure he can play at that 2015 level again, because if you look over 8 years, that one year is an outlier. With 7 years looking mostly average in terms of production, they don't want to give that guy $25 million. They'd give $25 million, or at least consider giving $25 million to the guy if he can produce a 2015 season again.
And there was a lot that went right in the 2015 season, of course, but that is, I think, the caliber of play that Dalton is capable of when everything does go right. And this is something that Dalton supporters would probably point to and say, he had 2015. Why are we talking about Josh Rosen? Why are we talking about Dwayne Haskins? If you know, we have this guy that's proven, you know, we think that we could have won the Super Bowl in 2015 if he didn't get hurt, say Bengals fans.
I also think there's a chance that he's looking at it as knowing very much, because his next quote talks about how everyone got hurt last year and how it affected Dalton. I think he's very aware that Dalton is not a lifter of talent, but a facilitator. He's a point guard. So he needs the talent around him. He needs people to stay healthy. He needs everything to go right in order to produce like 2015. And that fact, if he believes it, which it sounds like he does in the next line, would give you hesitation to give that type of guy top-end money.
Yeah, and that quote that Joe's referencing is, "We lost so many other pieces, it fell apart. But if he's healthy and we stay healthy enough, I have confidence in him." So that's quite a caveat on, right? I have confidence in him if everyone's healthy, right? So maybe there's some nuance there and some selective word choice from Mike Brown.
Because you can't expect everyone to be healthy. It was crazy.
Healthy enough.
Right. 2015, you look at it, and all 11 starters made it through until Dalton got hurt. He was the one getting hurt. So there's that caveat of everyone stays healthy. Oh, and if Andy Dalton stays healthy, we have right. confidence. Yeah, we all did in 2015. We have not seen that in 8 years.
Well, and so many of those guys that made that team, that offense in specific, work are in Los Angeles or New York or Detroit or Atlanta.
Yeah.
They're elsewhere.
I love the quote also on Twitter by Joel Corey, and I'll read that real quick. It says, "It never occurred to me that the Bengals would announce that Andy Dalton isn't getting a contract extension this offseason. The best single season for a quarterback in Bengals history ought to be required of Dalton for a new deal in 2020 to be given any consideration." And I think he nails that. And that's what I'm getting to by 2015. If he produces that again, then you consider it.
Yeah.
But until that, I don't think you consider it. And I don't think the Bengals are.
And they have the contract structured in such a way that they have these easy outs. Everyone freaked out. I'm sure you all remember. Everyone freaked out when the Bengals signed Andy Dalton to this contract extension.
I freaked out until we got the details.
And then we got the details. And first off, he's the 21st most expensive quarterback in the NFL. He's still paid more than a rookie, obviously. We've talked about that a lot on the podcast. But no cap penalty whatsoever. You can get out of that contract free as a bird this year or next year. If they somehow end up drafting, you know, Dwayne Haskins, he comes in and blows them away and he doesn't need time to develop after being a 1 year starter, then they can cut Andy Dalton at the end of the preseason and save $16 million. I don't know what they spend that money on at that point, and there's no real point to me at this after most of free agency has happened to cut Andy Dalton at this point.
Yeah. But I do think
maybe they try to trade
exactly where I was going because of the way they've been unassuming with a plan here. You know, not really from what it sounds like they're not in on the Rosen thing. We'll talk about Rosen, but they're have made really no public. I guess we can read between the lines and say there's been interest in draftable quarterbacks, but they don't look like they're being aggressive, right? This time last year, the Jets were trading up. Buffalo was actively trading up. So you knew those teams were moving for them. The Eagles a couple years ago when they got Carson Wentz were actively trading up. These teams were making moves already.
But nobody
so.
Really is.
So but maybe, no one really is, right?
Maybe they have this idea that, you know, there's three guys. Maybe they feel okay about Drew Locke and Dwayne Haskins. And they're like, well, if one of them's there, we'll take him. And if not, we'll go back to it next year, and maybe next year we'll get aggressiver, or maybe they'll just continue being the Bengals.
Every few weeks I get a hint about it again that there are smart NFL people or teams, NFL teams, that are paying attention to what the Bengals are doing based on the fact that they believe the Bengals have interest in these draft quarterbacks. And every once in a while someone will drop a line to me again that says, you know, this team thinks the Bengals are going to take a quarterback. What do you think? And I, you know, just hearing that it and you hear it multiple times from different people that would know it, there may be some smoke or fire with that smoke. And yeah, I think that's the scenario. And then what I was saying is you wouldn't just cut Dalton, in my opinion. You would do kind of how the Eagles did with Carson Wentz. Great example. Again, they had Sam Bradford, remember? And then yeah. Teddy Bridgewater goes down. They were able to flip Bradford, I want to say a first. Am I crazy or was it a second? But it was a premium pick.
It was a good deal.
It was. And you do that in camp because these injuries happen and these teams that think they have got a chance are desperate at that point. I would love to see a desperate team that needs a quarterback get Andy Dalton and let him have that chance for a premium pick. I mean, I think we'd all be down for that if they did end up taking a quarterback at 11.
Because if it's a team that's good and they just lose a quarterback, then Andy Dalton is a great fit.
Perfect fit for any of those teams.
What about the Patriots? Would the Patriots right. consider Andy Dalton if Tom Brady went down early in the right. season?
Like, it depends. I think the Patriots may be in the market for drafting a guy, but that doesn't mean you would get
that aside,
a Super Bowl. Right. You wouldn't get a Super Bowl, though, if you drafted a guy in the first or second round and not this year. And they're an older team for the most yeah. part.
So would Bill Belichick look and see Andy Dalton on that Tom Brady spectrum? Well off of Tom Brady, obviously. We're not saying that Dalton is Tom Brady, but the good pre-snap, very, very good pre-snap processing, and say, you know what, with me and with our, again, I'm going to use institutional knowledge of the NFL, we can win with Andy Dalton. And I don't know what you get. I feel like Bill Belichick's always going to win the trade, but I mean, maybe that's a place.
Yeah, I'd love to see it.
Because who else is going to have the talent, really, to say, you know what, let's bring in Andy Dalton? I mean, maybe the Rams?
Pick any of these teams that, yeah, sure. Pick any of these teams that don't have a great backup that were the final six teams or so. I mean, I'm drawing a blank here, but who's Seattle's backup? Who is the backup for the Chargers? Did they just sign someone? Yes, Tyrod Taylor. So yep. I'm just thinking of one of those teams that felt like they are building for this hump, for this run, yeah. and then they lose their guy. They would be the teams in the most desperation willing to trade.
So there is a world in which Andy Dalton does have trade value. We didn't see that trade happen. A lot of people are speculating with Washington and the reunite with Jay Gruden out there, but regardless, that is
Jay Gruden had some interesting comments also. I don't know if you saw him during the owners meeting. Gruden talked about all the quarterbacks and had
the draft quarterbacks?
Yeah, all the draft quarterbacks. Yeah. And we've kind of complained a little bit about Taylor being very bland in his responses, and other people have said the same. But Jay Gruden was saying basically who he likes, how he likes the talent and the bits and pieces of Drew Locke, how he I believe you mentioned Will Greer as an upside guy to be interested in. But he also – the one to me was Dwayne Haskins. And this was confirmed to me by somebody else right after because it made me ask this, that – he views him as the one guy of these top guys that needs to sit to start his rookie year and develop. And I asked about this with a source, and they agreed. And they agreed that other teams may view him that way. And if it's not the Jaguars at 7, it could be the Bengals at 11. And if not, it's a fall. This is not what the source was saying, but he was saying there aren't many teams that are saying we want Haskins over Drew Lock or even Daniel Jones. Surprisingly, Giants, it sounds like, are really high in Daniel Jones. But that's something to be aware of, that there is a chance Haskins is there. And he may be the guy that wants to sit. And if that's the case, that's a great opportunity. The Bengals have that ability to offer that.
That's exactly what the Bengals would probably want to do. I wouldn't be surprised if Mike Brown wants to go back to the old Carson Palmer blueprint. The last time he really had a quarterback he could hang his hat on that was a little bit of a talent elevator, Carson Palmer was really good.
Yeah.
Speaking of coaches talking about players, Vic Fangio said that neither Devin Bush nor Devin White are anywhere near Roquan Smith. I think that's interesting.
It is, because originally I said I thought Roquan Smith was better. And then both tested – I mean, Roquan Smith did too, but both tested so well that I definitely can see a scenario where one goes before where Roquan Smith went last year, and that could be the Bucs at – yeah, and the Bucs pick fourth or fifth. Fifth. I think it is. That could happen. If not, it's funny because I've also heard the Bills – not the Bills for Devin White, but the Bills and the Broncos picking right before the Bengals have very similar targets, it sounds, from like their draft guys that I follow and I talk to. They keep naming the same guys. It's funny, both of them mentioned Christian Wilkins this week to me, and I'm like, damn, we've heard Jeff Hobson mention him. We thought it was kind of crazy, but here's two teams right above the Bengals. If you talk to Broncos fans or analysts, they're like, we hope Ed Oliver's there. If not, it's Devin White. And I'm like, that's what we're saying. Geez, so one of these guys may break our hearts right in front of us, and I think that would be very interesting if we will debate like we did last year. One pick ahead of you goes the guy that you really coveted this whole time.
And speaking of Christian Wilkins, I don't know how upset I would be about Christian Wilkins if they miss out on Ed Oliver. If Ed Oliver goes 9 and they end up drafting Christian Wilkins 11, I don't think that's the worst thing. But we'll talk about that, I think, another day. Let's get through the rest of the Mike Brown stuff here. It sounded like he was a little bit conflicted on letting go of Vontaze Burfict, but he did say that he doesn't expect that he's going to have to defend whoever Vontaze Burfict's replacement is. He thinks that some of the stuff that he was accused of, that being Vontaze Burfict, was overblown, but he acknowledged that, you know, the Bengals had to deal with the repercussions of him being accused of all these things. So it sounds like, you know, part of him is ready to be, ready to move on. Yeah.
Yeah. He's rid of all those headaches.
Yeah. He talks about a clear path forward. And I don't know if that's talking about we need a linebacker at 11 in the draft, and that's what's clear, or if it's just we don't have to deal with the muddy waters that came with Vontaze Burfict anymore.
Yeah, and there was things – he was under the microscope, right, especially over the last 4 years, but it intensified as everything went on and social media grew. But even last year, if you remember the video of what it appeared to be, he spit on Marshall Yanda in that pile, and – even Marshall Yanda –
Marshall Yanda spit on him.
Spit on him, yes. And there was reports that Burfict did something first, and then Yanda had to say, I never spit on anybody. That's not my character, John Harbaugh. And then I believe Marvin Lewis was defending Vontaze Burfict also. So it's always little scenarios where it looks like Burfict got into a scuffle with somebody in camp, and now Marvin's got to defend that and say no more videos at camp. And so it was always something with him minor that looked much worse because of his reputation that they had to defend and say and go on the record. And I think they are happy not to have that headache. And plus, it what made it easy, because Mike Brown mentions how good Burfict was when he was focused and on and healthy. What made it easy is that he wasn't last year.
Yeah. I think that does help because, you're right. He said, and I think everyone can agree, when Vontaze Burfict was in his peak, when he was playing well, when he was on the field, he was a bit of a transformative player for the Bengals defense. But that has been few and far between. Even when he was healthy for years, his first few games coming off his suspension is weeks 5, 6, 7. When he's getting the groove of it, he wasn't very good. And then his second half of the year, as long as he didn't have a neck stinger, he would also be good. Other quotes from Mike Brown today out of Arizona. He talks about what it's going to be like to have a young coaching staff. It sounds like he's a little tenuous about it, but this is me just reading the quote. I didn't hear the way he talked about it. He says it's going to be quite different. He said, I think that's what our fans wanted. They felt we needed that. I think maybe they're right in how they feel. So he does give the fans some lip service here again. Similar comment to what we heard when he introduced Zach Taylor as a coach back in February. Kind of interesting.
Yeah. All of this, what he's saying is, I think, how most people felt, the chance to get young. And I thought the interesting part of this was the optimism of turning this around quicker based on just having a new atmosphere, right, is how I felt he was saying. New energy, a new lift for the roster, and potentially being better this year because of it, and turning this around much quicker than I think some have assumed. Because even we have debated or pondered the idea of a rebuild, and what kind of rebuild is this? And some of that comes from, you really don't know what you're going to get from Zach Taylor as the head coach. But there is a scenario, and I've said this, that a lot of this roster plays much better just because of the coaching change.
Yeah, we have talked about that. And I think Bengals fans have talked about that too. And I think that's why maybe the Bengals, they're not a team that's willing to go full rebuild on purpose. We haven't seen them be willing to do that since Marvin Lewis came to Cincinnati. I think even you could argue before Marvin Lewis came to Cincinnati, they were never trying to be, they never had a plan. They were always trying to win as quickly as they could, even in the dark ages, I think. If they had a plan, maybe they would have gone about team building a little bit differently.
Was 2011 the closest, you think? Remember the transition from 10 to 11 and everything blowing up as they tried to bring on T.O. and really gear up the roster to make a run. They felt they had a really good roster going from 09 to 10, and it didn't work. And then we had the lockout season, off season, I should say, and Bob Okraski was fired. They hired Jay Gruden, which seemed like a very risky move at the time, in my opinion. They let the roster really turn over. They couldn't sign free agents, remember, until after the draft, much after the draft. They couldn't even sign undrafted guys that year. And they traded Chad Johnson. They ultimately traded Carson Palmer that fall. So that was probably the closest thing I ever think to a rebuild, and it happened so fast, and they turned it over in 1 year and got a new star quarterback and receiver to make the playoffs year one. I mean, we thought there was a lot of people predicting they go 1-15 or worse, as worse as you can be, 0-16. But they quickly turned it around and went from rebuild to quickly having one of the strongest rosters in the league within the next 2 years.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm looking at the roster now. So AJ Green and Andy Dalton were new, but on that team already, I guess, Andre Caldwell, Jordan Shipley, Jerome Simpson were the other wide receivers. They had a pretty good offensive line.
Clint Bowling was a rookie, if that's what you're looking at and wondering why he's backing up Nate Livings.
I wasn't, but I was looking at Andrew Whitworth and Bobby Williams and Andre Smith. And yep. I mean, Kyle Cook was average at best and Nate Livings wasn't great.
Right.
But still, overall, pretty good offensive line. The running backs were a bit of a mess. Did they sign somebody that year to play running back?
Is that yes.
Cedric this Benson?
No, Benson was 09. That's what, or 08. He's what carried them those years. they ended up really struggling this year with running back, and it was Ben Jarvis Green Ellis and really Bernard Scott, I want to say. Where are we looking at running back here? Yeah, Bernard Scott. And, yeah, I'm surprised Ben Jarvis Green Ellis isn't listed there because that's why they signed or drafted. Might have
been before.
Maybe it's the following year.
Did they really go a whole year with Brian Leonard, Bernard Scott, and Cedric Pierman as their running backs? I don't remember that.
Is this the year they signed Larry Johnson halfway through?
Could have been. Let's see. Let's look in the middle of the season here. Let's look in October. Cedric Benson.
What?
October 1st, 2011.
Because 2009 was definitely Cedric Benson.
Maybe Cedric Benson started the year on the PUP that year?
Oh, I know what. This has to. When was this?
Or this is August. 8-1? Cedric Benson was a free agent, so maybe they re-signed him after. Yes,
because you couldn't sign free agents at this point still. You're waiting for the lockout to be finished, and then everyone had to sign afterwards. So this you would have to go to like 9
here you go.
To see what this is. Yep, this is more representative.
The defensive line had a younger Michael Johnson, Geno Atkins, Damata Peko, Robert Gathers, Carlos Dunlap. Dunlap was in his second year.
You're missing, though. Before you go too far, Bobby Williams, I knew that was going to be his last year. He ended up getting hurt, and they really struggled at right guard. Otis Hudson, Reggie Stevens, and Clint Bowling, who was not a right guard and was not ready to play right guard in their power scheme, being the point man. That's why he looked bad his first year.
That's right. But the defense was pretty okay. Thomas Howard was signed. He got hurt, but Brandon Johnson was a backup there. Dan Scuda was backing up Ray Maluga. Manny Lawson came over. So they had okay play there at linebacker. And then the secondary was good. Nate Clements, Leon Hall, Reggie Nelson, Chris Crocker when he was still relatively young.
Nate Clements used to go inside to a nickel, and he was really good. One of the best tackling corners of that generation.
So, yes, going in, we talked about this in the podcast.
One other thing, though, can you go back to that?
I guess.
Go back to the depth chart. I only say this because we've had a few suggestions or requests to talk about some past players and sometimes obscure players. And I only think about this, and this wasn't the plan. We kind of are freelancing this podcast a little bit. But I look at this tackle situation. I wonder how many people remember this. With Andre Smith and Andrew Whitworth listed as the starters, the backups were Anthony Collins and Dennis Rowland. And if you remember, Andre Smith at the time was being rotated at right tackle, and they kind of didn't know what they wanted to do with him. And this may have not been 11, but it could have been 10 also, because Andre Smith was hurt as a rookie in 09. But they had like almost a passing game tackle and a running game tackle, where Anthony Collins would go in as the pass blocker, and then Andre Smith would go in. And they also rotated Dennis Rowland in at right tackle, and he was also the eligible tight end, extra jumbo guy. And Dennis Rowland, if you don't remember him, he was, I believe, an undrafted guy, but he was a technician, just didn't have the ability. He was a tall guy that was a technique guy, but just was not the most athletic. So he would go out there and he'd win sometimes, and I think Paul Alexander kind of used him as the example for Andre Smith and Anthony Collins, because Collins wasn't the technician type. But just that rotation, I remember people going like, what are they doing? Other O-line analysts were, I've never seen this before. I've never seen them rotate tackles. I just thought that was a interesting part in the Bengals' history.
That's a good note. Of course, Anthony Collins went on and got the Bengals, I think, a third-round compensatory pick when he flamed out in Tampa.
Him and Michael Johnson, so I'm not sure who was responsible for
maybe he was a fourth that year. And Michael Johnson was a third. So let's say, I guess the last quote that is reported, and this is all in a Fletcher Page piece, I believe, on the Cincinnati Inquirer website. Mike Brown was asked about his veto, his negative vote about the pass interference review changes, and I think that it's actually pretty salient with a lot of fans that don't want to see the game take longer, don't want to see New York intervening in the last few minutes of the game saying, oh, that's a Hail Mary, let's make sure there wasn't pass interference there. I'm very curious to see how they'll implement this rule, and this is one of the times that I am kind of on Mike Brown's side when he's a one vote out of 32 to not change replay here.
I said that yesterday too, and I wouldn't have voted to challenge it. I think we can do the right thing in other ways. In college football, how they pretty much review everything and at times will correct a call. And if you watch the AAF leagues, they will go over and they actually got a camera right in their booth to watch these refs go over the play. They will stop a play at any point if something egregious was missed, and they'll say, hang on, this has to be called. Go back. This is definitely a personal foul face mask. We need to adjust accordingly and continue.
Yeah. So let's take a little bit of a break. We'll talk about Josh Rosen. I got his name right this time. I'm learning his name just in case he becomes a Bengal. And then I'll forget it promptly and start calling him Drew again whenever he signs or is traded to, I don't know, San Diego or whoever.
There is no San Diego, but close.
Yeah, well, you know, it's tough to keep up. You know, everything's changing. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Locked On Bengals podcast. We're kind of winging it today, and I don't think we had a plan on this podcast, but within a few hours of before we sit down and start recording and at least gathering together a plan with Jake and I, we got a lot of news, not just Mike Brown quotes and stuff on A.J. Green and Andy Dalton, which excited us and sparked some interest in the ripple effects of that direction, but also that it sounds like Kyler Murray will be the first overall pick of the draft to the Arizona Cardinals, which will put their last year's 10th overall pick, and I'm saying that with a question mark because I believe it was 10, but Josh Rosen is available for trade. And it's funny that just after a day of, I want to say, coaches at the owners meeting saying that guy's not available or we can't talk about him because he's not available and he's on another roster. Well, within 24 hours, we find out he is available. So you wonder where talks are. You want to know who is interested and involved. I don't know that the Bengals are, but I like the idea of talking about it and debating it and slotting Josh Rosen in with these draft quarterbacks and, you know, having some fun and kicking it around a little bit.
So a few things that I think we should talk about to preface this conversation. First off, Benjamin Albright tweeted that, no, the Bengals haven't asked about Rosen. This, of course, came in after we decided we were going to talk about Rosen, so maybe this is going to be a hypothetical.
But I will say also that I've heard a lot of things about a lot of different quarterbacks this offseason and never once Rosen. So that mostly, when you hear me talking about it, it's because I think it's a good idea.
Right. The second thing that I want to talk about is, and this is because John Gruden yesterday said, I didn't even know Trent Brown was available when he was in San Francisco and the Patriots traded for him. I would have loved to have traded for Trent Brown. And that got me thinking of how do trades happen in the NFL? And is it just as simple as, teams need to be more aggressive about calling on guys they might be interested in? Why don't you pick up the phone and say, hey, what would it take for me to get Trent Brown from you? What would it take for me to trade for, you know, I guess Odell Beckham is one. But it seems like often in the NFL, it's the team that's trading the player, not the team acquiring the player, that's initiating talks. And sometimes, rarely, there are player for player swaps in the NFL. Most of the time, it's draft picks for players.
Yeah. And question kind of it's kind of a foreign thought to me because I grew up playing Madden and playing fantasy football. And if you wanted to trade someone, you openly talk about trading someone, or you actually have a trade block that you put these players on. And when you see in the news too that this player may be on the trade block, is the trade block a figure of speech, or is it a memo that goes out to all 32 teams and says, hey, we want to trade this left tackle or whoever you want? And it kind of makes me wonder if it's more of what you hear from GMs and personnel people of, you know, I think Cleveland might be interested. Well, I got a good connection with that GM over there. I'm going to give him a call and see. And now draft trades, I think, are even more transparent in terms of, well, we want to go up two picks. That guy is two picks ahead of us. And that's the team we're going to call him to move up. So I think that's a little easier. But when it comes to trading for a player, man, if teams are stunned that another team makes a trade on a guy that they may have been interested in, well, that's kind of eye-opening and scary that your team may never have been involved or ever had the chance to offer anything better. And for me, when I think of that, I think of if it is a personal relationship or teams that you think would be interested, like the Patriots seem to always be, I think of Brian Broaddus on Twitter. He's a good follow. He does draft evaluation. He used to work for the Cowboys, I believe, as a scout. He may be still involved with them some sort because I know he still does draft work for them. But Brian Broaddus has said before that the hardest team to trade with is the Cincinnati Bengals, and that if they're calling, you don't even pick up the phone, or I think it was the other way around. You don't call the Bengals if you're looking for a trade up or trade down in that scenario because they're never going to give you a good deal. And that kind of, when you put those two and two together, makes you think that, you know, when we question why aren't the Bengals calling about Darren Lee right now, are they? Are the Jets even calling them? Who's being the aggressor in these type of situations? Add Josh Rosen to this, but it does make you question it.
Maybe one day we can get Greg Linton on here or something. He can tell us how he can give us a verbal history of how trades happen in the NFL.
Yeah, we get someone on here. Maybe we can get a player that's been traded or something along those lines.
I want someone involved in the business side of it. Because a player, that's I don't true. Know, a player's just like, yeah, I got
well, traded. I want to know how a player finds out, too. And that's what I questioned also. Do you apparently not put perfect. It out there? Right. It seemed like Burfict knew, right, didn't it?
Well, I thought somebody suggested there was some insinuation that Burfict found out he was released on social media.
Yeah, the way he was acting, the way teams called, that's what I was still thinking he was traded because I was getting tipped off about 10 days before he was released that the Raiders were calling and reaching out and trying to work out a trade. And then I think that was also reported afterwards he was released. Yeah. So, yes, I think Burfict had an inclination around that time. If some people were keen on that, he was deleting some things off his Instagram and taking out mentions on a social media of Bengals and anything that may be.
I don't remember what it was, but somebody made some insinuation. I don't remember if it was an agent or another player. Somebody made an insinuation that Burfict, maybe it wasn't Burfict, but found out.
Anyways,
yeah,
I was going to say that. Do you not want to – if you're a team that wants to actually trade John Ross, right, you don't want it to get leaked. You may send out a memo to all 30 teams that, hey, we're interested in trading this guy. But yet, if you don't get a trade, you don't want to really let that player know that you're putting him on the block. You really don't want to kill someone's confidence or really make a turn a situation into something other than ideal. So I wonder if teams don't actually put it all out there to every team and really only talk to the teams they trust.
It could be, and if that's the case, then who has a good relationship with Mike Brown and the Cincinnati Bengals? And you,
the Buffalo Bills.
The Buffalo Bills, exactly.
Is that where you're going?
That's exactly who I was going to say. The Buffalo Bills are really the only team that has a recent history of dealing with the Bengals, and there have been a lot of free agent back and forth. And maybe this is just because Andy Dalton threw a touchdown pass to Tyler Boyd in 2017, but...
And they sent wings over, so everyone was happy.
Everyone was happy, and because of that... There is a potential trade partner for the Bengals, but the Bengals have made some draft day trades that have worked out to be mostly fair, I would say. Everyone remembers when Mike Brown turned down an entire draft worth of picks when Mike Ditka wanted to draft Ricky Williams.
And I think when Brian Broaddus was tweeting this, it was basically talking about the old Bengals or, you know, even early into early 2000s, but they've been a little more fluid on their draft board in moving, and they traded back last year, right?
Well,
yeah, they did trade back and traded up.
Wasn't it the pick swap with Cordy Glenn? Did they trade back another time?
Three times then. They traded back with Cordy Glenn, they traded back for Jesse Bates, and then they traded up for Malik Jefferson.
Right. So maybe new Bengals are willing to make trades in the NFL draft. That being said, Joe, you tweeted that you would give up 42 for Josh Rosen, you would maybe do a pick swap kind of deal. Maybe you give up 11 if you get 33 in Rosen.
Yeah.
What have you heard? Have we seen anything about the offers that are out there, or is that all speculative?
Speculation and rumors and stuff say the Chargers are the front runner to land Josh Rosen, which is interesting because you have a aging Rivers. You have also signed Tyrod Taylor, as we've said. Chargers, it would be interesting, and I wouldn't be, and I think another report said they've gotten a second round offer and they're waiting to see if they can get a first from anyone. So at the very least, it sounds like they're getting a second. So if you're listening to this and you're a Bengals fan that keeps saying, oh, just give them a third, well, that's not happening. And in fact, you may have to beat out 3, 4, or 5 teams for the services of Josh Rosen. And in doing so, that means 42 would probably beat a lot of teams. And then I thought of the scenario of a pick swap of, well, would you go back from 11 to 33 and get Josh Rosen in that based on the trade value chart? That's like giving a first-round pick, but you don't miss out on a premium selection. I think that one gives me more pause because I still think there's a chance a blue-chip prospect is there at 11, and I'd hate to see, like, man, imagine if the Cardinals get Kyler at 1 and then Ed Oliver at 11. I think that would be a tremendous punch to the gut, even if you end up with a franchise quarterback in Josh Rosen.
Well, but that's what the – I mean, yeah, there's an opportunity cost that is giving up a pick to another team, and that makes it feel worse. If you're just saying we're going to trade 11 for Rosen and you get nothing, then, yeah, why would the Cardinals do it for one? But then it's just you're drafting Rosen at 11. Yeah. So it's only a gut punch because somebody else picks in the spot that we've been thinking about for the last 2 months.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good point. Because I thought of that when we traded back in the Cordy Glenn deal, and I looked at everyone who would have been still there at 12 and who I believe it, and I think we said this recently, but Dane Brugler of The Athletic said the Bengals would have taken Leighton Vander Esch, or were at least eyeing Vander Esch. The Cowboys believe the Bengals in their mock drafts were in on Leighton Vander Esch. And so that's, if that was the pick, that would have been really cool.
That would have been a great pick. But at the same time, then they wouldn't have Cordy Glenn, and you can debate the merits of Cordy Glenn.
But then you draft Jonah Williams this year, and are you better off in that scenario? Leighton Vander Esch or Devin White, Devin Bush?
I don't know.
You don't know? That's what you're just going to say.
We don't know what these guys are going to be in the NFL yet. Last year, pre-draft, it would have gone Roquan Smith. It probably would have gone Devin White second. It might have gone Edmonds third. Nobody had Vander Esch up with Edmonds and Roquan.
I did.
Okay. Above Edmonds?
Yeah. I said he was in the same exact tier as Edmonds.
Okay. Same tier.
Right. So you flip a coin, I guess. But, you know, I'm just saying that the Bengals may have done that. It may have shocked a lot of people, I guess, but it would have hopefully worked out.
We don't know what's going to happen with the guys in this year's draft yet. It's probably going to be like some fifth rounder that we haven't talked about yet. It won't be Blake Cashman or Ben Burkervin or Joe Giles Harris or whoever you want to name. It's going to be somebody we haven't talked about.
Great. There's going to be a few guys that they're going to draft. Every year there are, like Devontae Harris last year, I had no idea and I had to go back and watch. But there's always a few guys that I really love digging into afterwards. And you look at them through a different lens because you know they're wearing Bengal stripes. But at the same time, it reignites your fire when you know they're on the roster.
Yeah. So Josh Rosen, it sounds like it's going to at least take, what, second?
First? It's going to at least take a high second, in my opinion. Or they want that. They want a first, but they aren't in the driver's seat. If they've... It's known now that they're taking Kyler, and if that's the case, well, they aren't the team with the leverage right now, unless a lot of teams get involved.
What a life it must be to have Benjamin Albright sources, because that guy, when he says something, he doesn't miss.
He's good, and that's why we talked a lot about the Tannehill scenario for the Bengals, and it's funny because even after Tannehill was traded to the Titans, people were in his mentions like, well, what happened to that? Well, I thought you were so strong on that, and he goes, you guys act like the Bengals weren't involved on that trade. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I'm glad it didn't work out that way.
Well, who knows what would have happened from there, Joe?
Sure.
Maybe they extend Tannehill for 3 years and then we're crying in our Cheerios, but maybe not. All right. So last segment of the show here before we sign off for the day. And tomorrow, we're already to mailbag weekend. So I'll give you a reminder on Twitter. I'll give you a reminder at the end of the show to get your questions in. Before we get there, Roto World's Evan Silva and Josh Norris collaborated on an NFL draft needs and draft options article for the Cincinnati Bengals. And according to Evan Silva, the needs for the team are quarterback, citing a 120 start sample for Andy Dalton, which I think is a sassy way to say, you know, we know what Dalton is. He's a roller coaster and he needs to be surrounded by a boatload of talent. This isn't to say he can't succeed, but he's only really had one great season. The second one is offensive line, which he cites that the Bengals finished 26th in tackle for loss rate allowed, 25.6% of the time, and 22nd in adjusted line yards, and 19th in adjusted sack rates. Obviously,
you got to quote this next line though, because I love the quote here. It's trotting out swinging gate starters, right tackle Bobby Hart, right guard Redmond, center Price, and left tackle Glenn. Only Bowling held his own.
And there could be some debate there, perhaps specifically about Cordy Glenn, who wasn't great by his own standards, but was average, right, at left tackle. Anyway. an early round offensive tackle could push for playing time on either side immediately. Of course, we've talked about the money that they have dedicated to those positions, and it doesn't necessarily look like they could be an early starter to us, given the Bengals' old ways. But their need, obviously, linebacker. The Bengals' linebackers have been bad for quite a while, and for the first time, it's really, really showed up in 2018.
Jake, how do you classify the need for O-line then? It's still a need because they aren't good enough there, and there's definitely opportunity for upgrade if they invest at guard or tackle early, right? And they could, you draft a tackle, he's better than Bobby Hart at 11. That is the truth. They draft a guard in the second round, he's better than John Miller. And so there is definitely opportunity, but will they play the guy number one? And number two, would they play better as a rookie than the guys you are currently scheduled to start? That's also debatable. They'd have to be good draft picks right off the bat, which isn't out of the realm of possibility. So is it, considering it a need, is it a need because it's a bad unit with opportunity to upgrade? But really, all five starters, you could argue, are set. And even a draft pick is not going to come in and make a dent unless they're spectacular or someone gets hurt.
I think it's a fair argument to say that the Bengals offensive line is set for 2019. And this is not to harp on the Bobby Hart signing, but because they gave Bobby Hart a boatload of money and a $6 million raise this year. If he was back on a one-year, $2 million deal, then yeah, sure, right tackle is certainly in play. They improved at right guard in free agency. They have now probably average to slightly above average track record of right guard in John Miller. Left guard, we know what it is. Center, we're expecting a second-year step from Billy Price. And left tackle, we're putting our hopes on Cordy Glenn's health.
Yep.
But, I mean, knowing all those things, you know how Bobby Hart could implode at any time, and you know that Cordy Glenn has a history of injury that he contends with. So maybe a first-round offensive tackle, maybe he's not starting this year, but he could certainly step in at left tackle if Cordy Glenn deals with injury again, if Bobby Hart doesn't take a step. And if not, then he's probably starting next year because, I don't know, maybe they won't learn about Bobby Hart, or maybe Bobby Hart will go out and post a PFF grade above 69 and we'll be shocked.
But I was going to say also, there is, I think a normal team would, even if they were stuck with this Bobby Hart contract, they would still be open to benching that contract if the rookie they drafted and Bobby Hart, let's say Bobby Hart stinks again, just reeks, and you're 6 weeks in and he's killing your offense, and on every 17 pass blocking he's given up a pressure like he did last year. That happens. You say, we got to go to the rookie. Yeah. Got to go to the bullpen. Give me the righty. And you put him in. But also, Cordy Glenn, you should probably expect him to miss four games based on the average of what he typically does. So if you put those together, there is a scenario where a rookie plays still 500 snaps, and that's basically what they got out of Billy Price last year.
Yeah, and then you're talking about the Bengals being a normal team that plays the best player. And if the Bengals didn't think Bobby Hart could go out there and start all 16 games, they would not have given him the money that they did.
In fact, I think they paid him because of it. He played the most snaps in the offense last year. Exactly. I think part of the reason was they looked at him as, this guy's durable.
We've talked about this. We're repeating ourselves.
Yeah,
I'm not going to talk about Bobby Hart for the rest of this podcast, if we can help it. So let's move into the draft picks that Josh Norris has proposed for the Bengals in 2019. In round one, Devin Bush. Slow linebackers equal a slow defense. And the Bengals linebackers are slow, and Devin Bush is fast. And I think 30% of people in a poll I saw today on Twitter say that they think Devin Bush is LB1. So there is a sizable...
I think it ended up being like 26, but still pretty good.
Okay, last I looked, it was a 30. It might have continued to go down. There is a sizable minority of people that think Devin Bush is a better linebacker, plays with more control, is more disciplined than Devin White. So that is a possibility that exists in the world. In the second round, Josh Norris has the Bengals going quarterback with Daniel Jones, who they met with at the combine. Joe, any thoughts here besides that we think that a quarterback is in play? Daniel Jones might not be there in the second.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say, is Jones probably goes top 15, in my opinion.
15?
Yeah.
Oh, so four quarterbacks.
Yeah, it could happen. I think Jones could go ahead of Haskins based on things I heard today.
Wow,
and,
okay.
And if that happens, they will get real interesting and fun, I think, for Bengals fans because I want him to go before 11 because having that meeting with him at the Combine scared me a little bit. But, yeah, that I think fit-wise, Daniel Jones makes a lot of sense if we're running a Rams-type offense with a lot of RPO-type throws and stretch zone running and just a lot of easy manufacturer throws in that offense. And I think you get a lot of that with the Rams type offense too. So I think Jones makes a lot of sense.
Here's the thing with picking a quarterback second this year with Andy Dalton still on the roster is you're not using that $16 million for anything else this year.
Right.
So if they had gone out and spent that money and were floating closer to the salary cap than usual, I would say, yeah, they're going to go draft a quarterback because they know that they're going to get Andy Dalton's money back, or they think that they can get Andy Dalton's money back. Maybe they're
not winning this year with a rookie.
No, but that's not the point.
What are you saying?
Well, what? I just think that if you're going to move on from Andy Dalton, you got to use that money right away.
Well, I think if you're going to move on from Andy Dalton and draft a rookie, the largest argument, I even use this with Josh Rosen, or largest detractor is, well, will it even matter if they save 10 to 15 million? Will it even matter because will they even spend it? And I think it's a fair question.
Well, and I'm proposing that maybe the Bengals don't, but they should.
Oh, for sure.
So, yes, they could draft a quarterback and sit him behind Andy Dalton for a year, and then they spend that $17 million next year. And maybe they improve the roster somewhere next year. They just I think that I want them to use the money. And if it's Daniel Jones and I mean maybe Daniel Jones is Andy Dalton 2.0, right? And he's just the same guy.
But if that's the case, then you need to maximize the cap, and that's
exactly
key with him.
Exactly. Right. That's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah,
it's a lateral move, and then you need to spend the money to build up the team again, so you have another 2015 and 2021 or whatever it is.
Right. I know I'm with you completely. Yes. That's if you aren't getting a difference making quarterback, you better be prepared as an organization to maximize the cap and roster for a short window run.
And the other thing is, like, maybe they can trade Andy Dalton right away. And we talked about this earlier. And if they can trade Andy Dalton right away, maybe that means that they go out with Daniel Jones, so they don't have a great year. And then they're drafting high again. And they also have that extra draft picks to really build that team up for year two, and then year two, they take the step.
Sure.
Third, Josh Norris has the Bengals taking Chuma Adoga, tackle from USC, who's gained some steam, I think, aided maybe by Pro Football Focus, naming him as a sleeper. He was the guy you might remember from the podcast I mentioned, an NFL.com article mentioned as a player to watch for Bengals fans at the Combine. I think Chuma Adoga in the third round is pretty good value. He has... Yeah. The length, he has the
athleticism,
excellent mirroring. Sam Monson on the PFF video, when he was talking about Chuma Adoga as a sleeper, he talked about twice at the Senior Bowl, he mirrored an edge rusher literally from left tackle all the way around the arc to right tackle twice. Yeah. And he said that he's only seen that once, maybe once from one other guy once a year.
He was very impressive at the Senior Bowl, I thought, in terms of athleticism, long arms, really long arms, and low wide hands. And I think he can use a little upper body strength, especially midsection chest core strength. But even in run game, him and the Texas defensive lineman, DN, D-tackle type, you know what I'm talking about, Charles and Menahue, went at it, man. These are two guys with length. And in the run blocking drills, 11 on 11, that was fun to watch those two guys. And they consistently ended up in a stalemate, just two big guys locking horns. And when I mean big, it's really because they're so long. And I liked Adoga. I liked Adoga a lot, and I think he wouldn't be surprised to me if he went in the second round, to be honest. So getting him at 72 in the third round, I think, is a definite option. I've grown on the idea of day two tackle because I really like a handful of guys.
Chuma Adoga, Max Sharping, the guy from Washington
Titus
State.
Titus Howard,
or not Washington State.
He's not from Washington State. But a lot of people like Caleb McGarry, too. I saw him in the first round.
Yeah. What school is Titus Howard? Arkansas State?
Alabama State.
Ah. Darn it. Almost got there. Anyway.
Your Washington was Andre Dillard, you're thinking.
No, I was thinking Washington State.
Yeah, that's not Washington State.
McGarry.
No. McGarry is Washington.
I thought it was the other way. No?
Nope.
Okay.
Red helmet for Dillard.
Yep. Fourth round. Kingsley Keke, Texas A&M defensive lineman, who is
another
a guy.
Another Senior Bowl guys.
Yep, another guy who Josh Norris says would be, I think, in the carry win role.
Yep, that's exactly what he is. He could play some end. I think he's an under tackle, D tackle. He's a nickel interior rusher, in my opinion. He gave some people some issues at practices. He stood out a bunch for his leverage and off the ball quickness. I think this is definitely one that makes sense to me in terms of fit and need. And I don't love Keke Kingsley. Like, if this was Kalen Saunders, you guys know I would love that. But I could definitely get behind a Keke Kingsley pick on day three.
I
keep saying his name backwards, and I can't help it. It just doesn't look right.
Well, you'll get there if he becomes a Bengal, just like I'll figure out Drew Rosen's name is Josh.
Whatever.
And I watched a little bit of Kalen Saunders the other day and think that he will need some time in the NFL. Do you agree before he can really make an impact? Or do you think he
defensive
can
defensive tackles normally do need some time? The speed,
maybe, and more so than a typical. I mean, we're talking about him in the third or fourth round, so maybe that's why.
Yeah. And right, if we're talking first rounder, we should probably expect a little production. But there's a reason he's not going higher, and because he's coming from a small school, and because of it,
yeah,
there's a lot of technique stuff and you know, some speed of the game that you're going to have to adjust to.
Yeah, and just he got knocked pretty far back off the line of scrimmage, just a surprising amount for the level of competition. I did watch the North Dakota State game, which was apparently one of his worst games. So
yeah.
Maybe I need to go back and check a little bit more, but I was surprised at how easily he was moved for that level of competition, for the hype he's getting. Joe, why don't you talk us through the next few picks? I don't know these names as well once we get into this part of the draft. The next one is Javon Patterson, an inside offensive lineman from Ole Miss.
Yeah, he's a guard center prospect, and a lot of people like him as an upside day three pick. For the Bengals, Josh Norris ends up giving them three offensive linemen in total. So, with 11 picks, yeah, I could see that happening. I think the interior of their offensive line is pretty set, and I think they actually have some really good backups. So, it'd be interesting if you take a guy in the fifth round, where does he slot, even with a Rod Taylor from last year, in terms of you know, being the last guard on the roster. So, I think that could get a little bit dicey, but you could also, in this scenario, view Trey Hopkins more as a tackle also, and he'd be your fourth guy, so you keep Patterson as maybe the backup center in a reserve role. So for me, not sure that he's got a spot on the roster, but I think a lot of people like him as upside. The next guy, sixth round, first of the five sixth rounders, Jordan Brailford out of Oklahoma State. Good size, length, highly athletic. He was very productive this past year. He's definitely like a day three target for me, and there's only a few for edge rushers that I'm like, I want to take a chance on that guy because he's got the measurements, he's got the production. Sometimes the tape, you just don't see him for a lot of it, and that tends to happen with pass rushers in college because there's so many plays I feel like they're not even involved in. But
especially in that conference, Oklahoma State, that's
it's
a lot
so
of,
wide open.
Yeah,
and you're they're rushing.
Yeah, they're rushing three guys, and yeah. Sometimes a fourth.
Yep, they just disappear. It's just there's so many times where you're just watching and you go, okay, nothing happened that entire game on that tape. So Brailford is definitely sixth round. I'd love that pick. Terry Godwin, Georgia wide receiver, is the next. For me, slot guy, but I think he's got some special teams ability also. Josh Norris mentions his downfield receiving skills. I like a bunch of other receivers better, but we're talking sixth round. The Bengals need to probably, in my opinion, spend an earlier pick. Like if that was fifth round instead of Javon Patterson, because I'm not sure where his fit on the roster would be in 2019. If they spent a receiver there, would be my only gripe with this pick, but I don't have a problem.
And he also mentions that there are 5 6 round picks and he expects the Bengals will trade one or two, because
I think we all should, right?
Yeah. 5 6 round. What do you do with 5 6 round picks?
Nothing. Two of them may make your roster on a good draft, and the rest are practice squad getting cut or getting picked up by other teams. So it's not worth it. And he finishes the last three picks here with Ataro Alaka, Texas A&M linebacker, Darius West, safety out of Kentucky, Sua Opeta, Weber State offensive lineman, highly athletic, and then Kendall Blanton out of Missouri, which is someone actually I am interested in, and surprised he had him there in the seventh round.
And that's the only tight end that he has the Bengals taking. So
yeah,
I think maybe the fifth round pick is a tight end instead of an interior offensive lineman, unless somebody's falling there. you know, the first four picks, I think we can agree, all fit kind of with needs either this year, next year.
And if the Bengals were going to take a quarterback, it'd be someone that presented extreme value in their opinion, like Daniel Jones at 42, right?
Or Dwayne Haskins at 11, perhaps.
Sure, right. Depending on where they have him, right? I'm just saying, if they didn't like take a franchise guy at 11, somehow you're there at 42. You're like, man, Daniel Jones is still here. We kind of like him. We'll take him.
Yeah. So we've been talking about random topics for about an hour and 5 minutes. Should we wrap it up?
Yeah. This was our most random, I think, podcast. But I wonder if people liked us going all over the place.
Well, let us know, Bengals fans. And also, just I told you I'd remind you, and Joe did it too. Get your questions in. We will put out a tweet on the Locked On Bengals account sometime on Thursday. We are recording tomorrow. We're recording Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern time. Get your questions in by then for a chance to have them read and answered on air. We hope you join us tomorrow for that. Until then, have a good one, Bengals fans.